Welcome to the Community Conversations podcast, where we believe that world transformation begins with gospel transformation, and gospel transformation begins with discovering the truth about who God is and who you are. And it starts right now.
Hello, welcome to another episode of the Community Conversations podcast. I'm here again this week with Noah Chant. Noah, how are you?
Doing good. My throat's a little dry, so
a little dry.
I sound a little more manlier.
Okay.
Than I normally would.
No, you sound great. You look great too.
Thanks. I feel like $1 million.
I'd love to continue talking about a little bit about what we talked about last week. To give you a recap, last week we talked a bit about the history of Beloved Co. We talked sort of where we came from, what led to basically our existence as a church, yeah. And what the first 3 years of being a church has kind of been signified by.
Yeah.
The first year, I like how you put it, it was a bit of an exodus, as you said, from systemic
time.
Religion,
mm-hmm.
Kind of getting out of that system. And then year two was almost like another layer of shedding off who we're not.
Yeah. Yeah. We had to leave what we were and then we had to learn who we weren't.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I think in my head, even I remember thinking because we're starting something new, like from the beginning, we'll be what we want to be. And it's like, actually,
right.
Takes a long time.
Yeah.
It takes a long time to shed that off and
yeah.
figure out.
Well, and I even Moses got a description kind of the land, but still not flowing yeah. with milk and honey and a couple things. It's like, it's not really a
yeah.
great depiction. It's just an idea.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So I think we had a little bit of a vision. But even then, by the end of the second year, maybe by the end of the second year, I think we were starting to step into mm-hmm. a little bit more of our identity of who
yeah.
we're called to be.
Maybe it wasn't all of year two.
Yeah.
Maybe more of the first half.
Yeah.
There was just a lot of that year two, like on the back end, maybe not from our entire family perspective, but at least from a leadership perspective too, you know, especially for me, there was a time of really kind of beginning the real bonds of having a spiritual father and
yeah.
that deepened, you know, and getting kind of in the river, you know, of
yeah.
whether it be Apostle Damon, you know, or whether it be, you know, Mark, whatever that is like, that was kind of my initial, kind of stepping into that place and that river and kind of where we are and who we are now.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
all.
Actually, on that note, would you speak a little bit into that? Because the idea of like spiritual mothers and fathers is something that I think we've been like aware that it is a thing or should
yeah,
be a thing.
The language is around.
The language is around. I've definitely
yeah.
heard the phrase spiritual father, spiritual mother. You
sure.
know, but it's not something we had like really ever seen modeled to the
yeah.
degree that like Mark and Damon and those guys are doing it.
Yeah, for sure.
So give us a little bit of backstory. Like, how is it that you became like Mark Casto's spiritual son?
Yeah, it was, it's pretty funny. So I've actually known the Casto family since I was probably 14.
Wow.
No, 15. I'd have been 15 years old. I tell the story all the time because it shows how personable Mark was, even as a person, because I met him playing drums at a conference, and he was still the armor bearer for T.L. Lowry.
Nice.
Yeah, and so he's behind him, and so I introduced myself to him, and he says, "Hey, I'm Mark." He just started, I think, doing the stuff for OCI where he was, and he said, "Hey, give me your number. I'll give you mine. Like, anytime you need me, anything you want, like, reach out to me."
Wow.
Like, super personable all the way back then, you know, and so I've always kind of known him.
Sure.
And, you know, I've always had a, you know, somewhat of a relationship. Obviously, there was a major gap, which really, I mean, you can honestly make the case that all of that is actually because of Bailey. Because Bailey's family is from Covington.
Yeah.
And so we actually went to Covington when we were dating, and we were at a year pie. and I actually hear Noah chant, I'm thinking, who knows me?
Yeah. There's a reason I get away from
it. Yeah, there's a reason I go to Covington to not know anybody. And who knows me in Covington? And I turn around and it was him. And so we reconnected there. Wow. And the next two times I went up, we got coffee and just kind of, I learned his story of his exodus. Yeah. Out of the system, you know, which was way further ahead of mine. And we were on the same journey in a sense, but I'll say that he was on the purer form of it.
Sure. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like he was on the purest form of what I could have even imagined being on.
Sure.
And after those two times, you know, he had told me he was under Damon Thompson, and I've listened to Damon Thompson. I've, you know, gone and seen him before, but not this guy, not the guy he became.
Right.
And I was old Damon, you know, more religious dreadlock Damon Thompson, yeah. You know, like yelling at you for who you're not type stuff.
Yeah.
And he was telling me about him. And so actually, he actually was planning to come to Mark's, and I actually took you, me and you went together. The first time, and I think, you know, for both of us, especially for me, and I believe for you too, I don't want to speak for you, but it was like, it was the most wild encounter of my life.
Yeah.
I had never, and I'm learning, there's a scripture that I've been studying for a couple of months now, even from a leadership perspective, where it's in Mark, I believe, where it says that they were stunned at the authority that Jesus spoke with.
Yeah.
It wasn't even necessarily that there was such deeper revelation than that was already going around maybe by the Pharisees, the Sadducees.
Yeah.
But it says that they were stunned by the authority in which he spoke with.
Yeah.
And hearing Apostle for the first time, it was that.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily that it wasn't, I mean, there was a ton of new stuff I'd never heard before. Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
The guy's a revelation. You know, if you're a revelation junkie, he's the guy.
Yeah.
But like the base notes of it, of like, you're loved,
you're
accepted, you're righteous.
Yeah. Things that like we've kind of been, like you said, like we were sort of on that trajectory already.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I remember you and I left that night thinking, I've heard people talk about this, but at the same time, I never have until now.
Yeah.
Because you're right. There's like, there's just something about somebody who has an authority to speak into certain things.
Yeah.
And it does, like, it penetrates a part of you. It
right.
goes way deeper than just your mind.
Well, and it's someone who it's not theology for. It's actually in their heart.
Yeah.
This right. is not good theology for him, you know? And so, because I remember actually looking over at you and saying, like, I'm radiating. Like, on a cellular level, it feels like my body's shaking.
Yeah.
And we left that night. I remember we each had the exact same thought, that this is the closest, if not a very identical feeling of what it must have been like to heard Paul share the gospel and go like, well, yeah, I have to do that.
Yeah.
Of course, that's it. That's the only thing.
Yeah.
And so, and then, you know, listening to him and Mark more, and then I, you know, I just started making the treks myself to be around those dudes.
Yeah.
No intentions, no plans, no, you know, reserve seats, no nothing. Just just to be in that river. And I didn't really care fully what came out of it. I just wanted to be a part.
Sure.
I didn't care about the outcome. I didn't know I wanted to be connected, but, you know, then they begin to, you know, show me more of what the idea of spiritual sons and spiritual fathers is.
Yeah.
And the, you know, kind of the deeper revelation that that's what Jesus really was. That's what Paul was. You know, the only non-church letters that Paul writes are to sons, you know, Timothy and Philemon.
Right. Yeah.
He doesn't write, and they're either to churches or they're to spiritual sons.
Yep.
And so, you know, I began to learn what that process was, which had way less to do with ministry aspirations, you know, my preaching, or even really my theology at the beginning.
Yeah.
Really, it was more about who I am as a person, knowing I'm loved, my marriage, my finances, my home, my family, my health. And so, you know, I started talking to Mark a bunch. And through that, I remember like kind of approaching him and asking like, hey, like I want this. I was like, you know, and you use those churchy terms, like, would you pray about this? You know? Yeah. And I remember, I'll never forget, we were at the lobby of a Holiday Inn and just talking at, I think it was like 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
And he said, I don't have to pray about anything. I know that you're my son.
Yeah.
I don't have to pray about it.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it was, I could cry now. It was a really just beautiful moment because it was full acceptance, not into something, but into who I am.
Sure.
I'm just accepting Noah as Noah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that came out of that. And, you know, it's one of the things even Mark said one time. I was talking to him about, you know, sharing this message to our house and bringing, you know, the idea of beloved identity and righteous sonship, you know, here. And, you know, I was like, you know, I just have, he's like, don't forget, like, this message is actually your inheritance because you're my son.
Sure.
So this message is actually your inheritance to share wherever you want to share it.
Yeah.
And so it was like this really like eye awakening moment of that, like I get to be a part of this.
Mm.
And not from a ministry perspective, but just from a, like, just to sit at the feet of what's going on here, just to be a part. And so, that really translated into, I mean, obviously when you're in leadership, you know, over a family, who you are is going to translate into who you're leading.
Sure.
And so, you know, it immediately began to soak into here, and the language began to soak into here. And I never wanted it. I think there's such a process of this not being unauthentic.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to walk people, you know, slowly into the authenticity of this. And so, you know, I was bringing, you know, we still bring Mark in all the time, you know, bringing in people that speak the language and connecting. And so that was kind of my pull into this, this river and having this apostle and the spiritual father and these leaders in my life that now kind of really pour into me more than I've ever been poured into my whole life. And it hasn't, I've been more poured into the past 2 years than I have my whole life.
Sure.
And that's, you know, it's pretty wild to say.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So it sounds then that maybe, you know, I haven't talked about the first 3 years, kind of forecasting maybe what the future holds for us. Kind of sounds like we've found, you know, this river, and, you know, you've got the spiritual father. And
yeah.
You know, it seems like we've got a little bit of this stuff kind of laid out.
Yeah, we have a, you know, I think we have a furthering, like we have a, you know, very much a blueprint. And I can't remember if I used it last week, but, you know, I think the first part of that is once again moving away from overly church terms like church plant or new church and moving into terms like pilgrimage.
Sure.
You know, that's one thing really I think about our future right now moving into year four is a pilgrimage of something new.
Yeah.
Something that's actually not in our region.
Sure.
You know, and that's, and not being new just to, or being different to be different, but just because we're doing what we're really bringing a new wineskin to a city that doesn't have it.
Sure.
You know, and so we have this kind of this blueprint of furthering our identity as fully beloved, as kingdom family, and as representations of Christ. You know, I remember the first time Apostle made this bold statement, but it's the truth. And Mark said the same thing. I might have actually heard it from Mark the first time, is the idea that you going into your city and telling people, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father.
Yeah.
You know, and so creating a group of people that look like that, that are that you know, they clear out hospitals, they make businesses better, they make other families better. They, you know what I mean? They are the heads of society, not from a leadership perspective, but more from a servanthood perspective.
Yeah.
You know, and leading out of that and knowing for us that we have a river behind us doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's Mark or whether it's any of Damon Thompson's spiritual sons or Mark's spiritual sons, wherever that is, we have this river now of families and communities and everywhere from Charleston, South Carolina to Covington, Georgia to Mobile, Alabama to Louisiana to Utah to Iowa, to Edmonton, Alberta, you know, to Kentucky, to Ohio.
Yeah.
You name the state and we've got all these people that our people don't know about, but are doing what we're doing and we're being grafted into something that is a lot bigger than us in a good way.
Right.
In a good way.
Yeah. Yeah. And cause you want that. I mean, really the goal is that this river kind of grows till it covers the world.
It does. You know? It's like Paul says, like, you know, examine yourself in humility. And it's the humility to know that you're called to your region.
Sure.
Like, I don't have to worry about Covington.
Yeah.
That's not where I'm called.
Right.
And Be Love is not called to change the world. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we're called to the region, the city of Chattanooga, to this area to bring that message here. Mm-hmm. You know, I we're not here to plant 12 campuses and take over the United States as the church of the U.S.
Right. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
We're just here to
Be Love Nashville is not really on our radar. Yeah, you know.
Be Love. Yeah. Yeah. Be Love Kansas City isn't planned for next year.
Right.
You know, but we are called to this specific region with this specific message to, you know, one of the things we've been talking about is to really raise the banner mm-hmm. of Beloved Identity to our area.
Yeah.
To say that there is more than just church.
Yeah.
Like you're called to glow.
Yeah.
You're called to eradicate cancer. You know, you're called even to kingdom finances.
Yeah.
You're called into wealth, not to simply just be wealthy, but to advance the kingdom everywhere it goes, to take care of the need, to take care of the poor.
Yeah.
You know, to advance, you know, our city and make our city a hub where people come.
Yeah.
Imagine a city where people go, well, we're moving to Chattanooga because somehow there's no cancer there.
Right.
You know, because somehow every time someone starts a business, it blows up.
All the hospitals are closing
down. All the hospitals are closed.
People aren't getting sick anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and so, and I don't have to worry about Atlanta to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's a beautiful thing to not have to worry about everything else around you, but to know that you're called to a region and to settle in there.
Yeah.
Plant your roots, be that place, and affect a group of people. Because for, you know, for us, when we use terms like kingdom family or just family in general, it's not catchy terms. I'm not trying to be catchy. You know, it's a reality of how we, you know, it's a reality of how we live. Like you know what I mean? And you even take, you know, the families of our staff, like Nora and Izzy know, you know, they wouldn't know a life without me and Bailey being in it.
Right.
It would be a culture shock. Same with, you know, Braden or Angela and their kids. Like, you know, their kids know me now more than anybody else does. You know what I mean? I love on their kids. Y'all, you know, we're all connected now. We're this united thing that moves beyond just a common goal of having good church.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it's really not like these phrases, Beloved Identity and like kingdom family. They're really not marketing ploys.
No.
And they're not something that we're trying to set up as like a competitive edge against other churches.
Yeah.
Like I wish every church in the world was preaching like the truth about who the Father is.
Yeah,
and
if every church is packed with this message, great. Like
then
it's not.
The world changes really fast.
Really fast. And like if you were trying to grow a church, we're the wrong model.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, just being brutally honest, we're not the model that it's easy for everyone to accept.
Yeah.
And that's even why, like, I've tried to explain to our family the honor of creating a blueprint that one day people will naturally be in without effort. There's a lot of effort, you know, right now to put, you know, to not that it's works-based, but to be who we're called to be. And it's harder when you're the beginning, you know, the genesis of it, where one day people will just come into this. It's like if you go to Mobile now.
Yeah.
People go into, you know, like Apostle Damon Services. It's like, oh, this is incredible. Yeah, this was happening in Batesburg, South Carolina.
Right, have you ever heard of Batesburg?
Yeah, you ever heard of Batesburg 10 years ago?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like Covington. It's like, you know, it's like, yeah, Mark's services are awesome, but like, you know, they've been meeting up in that room and filling that room up for years now, for a couple of years now, you know, preparing for these things. And it's special to be a part of the pilgrimage before you're an actual colony.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's really good. Let's talk a little bit about, I know we've kind of already been hitting this, but I want to talk a bit more about just culture in general and our culture.
Yeah, that's a rough word.
our culture. Just as a church and kind of what, I hate even to say like what makes us unique, and because that sounds like, sometimes I don't ever want that to come across as like, well, what makes us better than all the other churches?
Sure.
Because it's not this competitive game.
It's not.
You know, I think that's a.
And what we are isn't something other than what the king, or at least what we are is not something other than what the kingdom is.
Right.
We're not trying to create some new fat, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
I won't cut you off.
But yeah, I love, we talk about culture all the time.
Yeah.
I'm just fascinated in general by the concept of like cultural development and how cultures are developed. And I think whenever I think about it, and like whenever in the past I've had opportunities to like teach or talk about culture, I always ask the question to people like, hey, what's the like name a place where like the culture stands out to you as like, yeah. or the very obvious, like you understand the culture.
Yeah.
And two places come up every single time. Yeah. I bet you know what they are.
Yeah.
Chick-fil-A and Disney.
And Disney.
Every time.
Yeah.
Because.
Well, God's Kingdom Restaurant and God's Kingdom. You know, the Magic Kingdom is God's Kingdom and Chick-fil-A is where he eats. So. My two favorite places. I'll be at both this week.
Oh my gosh.
I'll be at Disney World and Chick-fil-A both this week. So
that's a good week. Mm. But yeah, but the thing about like you go to Chick-fil-A and it's not that they have a culture and other places don't. Mm-hmm. It's just that they worked harder at developing mm-hmm. the culture that they have. And it's obvious.
Yeah.
The same thing at you go to Disney World and you can't find a piece of trash on the ground.
Yep.
It's not because people aren't throwing it. It's because part of the culture is, hey, we don't have trash on the ground.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that is, at least, you know, my current understanding, to the best of my ability to explain what a culture is, it's just an understanding of, hey, this is how we do things here.
Yeah.
Culture isn't, it's not necessarily as much about, like, the aesthetics and the signage and the lights and that. I think culture is comprised more of, I would say, like intangible qualities.
It is. Well, and it's a couple pieces is one, it's organically grown. It sure. can't be forced on people.
Yeah.
It grows in them by experience. It grows in them by, you know, proximity.
Mm-hmm.
And two, it comes from something or someone.
Yeah.
Like, you know, obviously being a Disney fan, I have really done a lot of study on the life of Walt Disney.
Sure.
And everything that you're seeing now on mass scale of thousands of people, one guy was doing before any of them were doing it.
Yeah.
One guy, you know what I mean, saw the idea of, you know, wonder and joy. And, you know, right. he would walk the streets of Disneyland, you know what I mean, in the 50s and go, why is this like this? How do we get people to, you know what I mean? It was his desire to create a great place. And that culture stemmed from him. And you can probably see the same thing with the, I believe, is it Truett?
Yeah.
Truett's at Chick-fil-A. You hear about their lives, even their, you know, like their Christian background.
Yeah.
That flows into Chick-fil-A because of them.
Right.
Not because there's this banner like Chick-fil-A, you know, a Christian restaurant. Yeah. You know, it doesn't say that.
Yeah.
It just flows out of the owners because they started a strong culture of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think culture, I think it's always built from the top down. I think it always, you know, I would say, and I've said this in the past, that I think that the greatest driving force of a culture and its development are the values of the people at the top.
Yeah.
You know, and so I would imagine that, you know, you think about Disney and they've got world-class customer service. I mean, it's out of this world.
Across continents.
Yeah, across, right? Like around the world. Like, you know, if you want good customer service, deal with somebody at Disney.
Yeah.
Because it's just, it's how they do things.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you're right. I think that stems from the top. And I think, and I've heard that about Walt, you know, I've heard that he was like, that these, some of these things were very specifically important to him, that they were his values.
Well, and even like, you know, you take little stories and he, one day he was in the parks and I'm better watch myself. We'll make this into a Disney podcast fast, but he was in the parks or he was in Magic Kingdom and he noticed trash everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they just didn't know how to fix it. He said, count the steps in between pieces of trash you find. And they counted it and averaged it out to about 12. And so they put a trash can every 12 to 14 steps away.
Gone. Sure. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It started with him going, no. The culture is higher. Because what you will find is, unfortunately, the culture will fall to the least common denominator. If the leaders aren't leading well, whatever the lowest form of culture there can be in the room,
sure.
If there's not good leadership, and in the church, if there's not apostolic leadership, it will fall to the lowest common denominator,
sure,
and the lowest form of what you're hoping it to be, And that's why leadership matters,
Absolutely.
If it's not the leader that does it, whoever the least is, and the least amount of culture you want.
Yeah.
It'll fall to that person.
Sure.
Because people, it's a lazy thing.
Yeah.
You know, how easy can this be on me?
Yeah. I think, you know, I think, and I've thought a lot about this, that the development of culture of a place, of the culture of any place, I used to think that it required only intentionality in order to build a culture. But what I've realized is that intentionality can be good and it can be bad.
Yeah.
And on the flip side of that, there's also ignorance too.
Yep.
So sometimes problems arise or culture begins to shift or take place because of things that the leadership was just ignorant to. Well, they didn't, you can't solve a problem that you don't know exists.
Right.
But then once the problem or something become, you know, comes to your attention, you become aware of something, then as a leader, you've got two options then. And either way, it's intentionality. It's either you are intentional in taking action and solving the problem.
Right.
Or you can have intentional passivity to where you know what's going on, but you think...
You let it go.
It feels like a lot to deal with.
Right.
And that's when I think you're right. I think the more passive a leader becomes, the more everybody else kind of takes the reins in developing the culture.
Yeah, for themselves and figuring it out themselves. And it is a leadership. And that's the thing, like one of the things that was so humbling in a way, you know, is Apostle said one time, he said that, you know, many people complain or many leaders and pastors complain about their people not getting this, not getting that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they were given to you.
Yeah.
They're given to you.
Yeah.
You know, and any problem that lasts longer than 3 years is a leadership problem.
Yeah.
It is a problem of leadership. And so you have to take the responsibility of, you know, like I realize that like preaching is not really like a as major of a responsibility as who I am as a leader and as a person to the people around me.
Sure.
That is the that is the main thing.
Yep.
Is modeling, like, you know, the kingdom man
to
those around me, because they will model that to them around them. You know, it flows that way.
Yeah.
And you know, it will become passive if you are passive about it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, unfortunately, even I think in just the age we're in, there is almost a fear of aggressive passion. Like passivity is the nature currently.
Sure.
Let people do whatever they want. Let people be whoever they want. Let them talk however they want, and don't challenge anything.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go way past that, but the reality is, like, Jesus had a almost an aggression of love. You see it in turning over the tables.
Yeah,
know, beating people with whips. You know what I mean? The way he would talk to the religious leaders and how much he hated religion.
Right.
There was an anger and frustration, a passion towards it. And, you know, that's not seen as strong anymore. That's not seen as good anymore.
Yeah.
We want the soft-spoken, passive leader.
Yeah. Hey, your love, just do whatever.
Whatever you need to do. Whoever you want to be. Come as often as you want. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not the message. And that's not really, you know, that's not even the leadership Paul carried or any of the early church. You look at the, you know, whether it's the Desert Fathers, you know, or the Patristic Fathers, whatever it is, that's not the leadership qualities.
Yeah.
There was this fervent passion and aggression towards love that pushed people to be who they were called and designed to be.
Yeah.
And you know, that's what I think is often lacking a lot now in all these, you know, churches and kingdom families is this passion to say, no, we're gonna go after this.
Mm-hmm.
And there may be a moment I look like the bad guy.
Yeah.
But we're gonna do it. And I'm not gonna be passive about, you know, the culture of the kingdom.
Yeah.
Because how can you be?
Right.
And when you've tasted it, why would you want to be?
Well, then you start to realize, I like what you were saying, but you start to realize that, like, once you've tasted really what life in the kingdom is meant to look like, you realize that it is unloving to not push people into that.
Yes.
Because it's the best thing for them.
It is.
And so if I'm going to love you well, I'm going to do the best I can to introduce you to the kingdom.
Right.
And to the Father.
Yeah. You want to stop being depressed? Fall in line with kingdom values, man.
Right.
Live in the kingdom realm and watch what happens.
Yeah.
You know, watch what you become.
Yeah. You want to see your job, your marriage, everything. You want to see that stuff thriving. Fall in love with Jesus and just jump in the river of his kingdom.
Yeah.
And just watch what happens.
It's even the importance, like we talk about, like when we talk about being in the room for a service, being in the room for communities, it's not some narcissistic form of saying, look how many's here.
Yeah.
Look how often the seats are filled.
Yeah.
It's that being in presence, being in proximity to presence, and I've been talking about it for a couple of weeks, changes you. And you may not feel it because it's not always emotional.
Yeah.
The change isn't emotional, but it changes you from a cellular level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've talked about like epigenetics, what you behold, you become.
Yeah.
It's scientific.
That's, I know.
Your literal genetics change
yeah.
by the environment around you.
Yeah.
You know, and so, like, I think oftentimes we carry such a, and our people have an incredible personal relationship. Our kingdom family yeah. is filled with passionate people who have a secret place.
Yeah.
And so I think oftentimes we can fall into this, well, I don't have to do this. It's like, no, no, no. You know, and I've said, I've made this statement, if the Acts church saw the value in meeting daily, mm-hmm. how can we not see the value in meeting even weekly?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they had people that walked with Jesus mm-hmm. and still saw the value in meeting daily.
Right.
You know, and how can we not see the value of gathering and seeking the kingdom together in that? Because it just changes you. Mm-hmm. And it would be unloving to tell people, don't worry about being in the room.
Right.
The yeah. unloving thing would be to say, yeah, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
But the loving thing is to say, if you keep coming into this room, watch.
Yeah.
Watch, because hunger is met.
Yeah.
When you're in the kingdom, man, your yeah. hunger is met.
Well, he comes to feed the hungry.
Yeah.
And, you know?
Yeah. And I even got this revelation the other day about, you know, I really believe that the multiplying of the fish and loaves of the 5,000, mm-hmm. I believe Jesus fed physical hunger because of their spiritual hunger to be at his feet.
Oh, yeah.
There was no, for some reason, when he's speaking, there's no complaining. No one's even really saying they're hungry at the time. They're just feeding off of him spiritually.
Yeah.
And he says, now that you fed off me spiritually, watch how I'll take care of you in the physical realm.
Yeah.
I've got the spiritual realm thing I'm doing, and you're hungry for it. Now everything here is taken care of. They didn't have to buy fish.
Right.
They didn't have to buy bread.
Yeah.
They didn't even have to wonder where it was going to come from. It just came to them.
Yeah.
And that came out of their sitting at his feet and listening
yeah.
and beholding Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy, that's really good. Yeah.
You know, it changes the room.
It does.
You know, and how many of your problems will be solved? And I think about this in my own personal life. I've seen more of my problems solved not by critical thinking, but by being in prayer.
Sure. Yeah.
And them taking care of themselves.
Yeah.
And not a lazy way.
Yeah.
But in the reality that the closer of proximity I have to him, the more the things behind me take care of themselves. It's yeah. just the natural state of the kingdom.
Yeah.
And I could be fearful of this or fearful of that. Even us getting a building.
Sure.
Moving into a new building.
Yeah.
There could have been a fear of, man, we don't have anything going on. We're not, you know, everything's kind of stalled out. We're not looking at, you know, we're kind of reached this place where we're not seeing anything. We're not looking as much.
Yeah.
And you realize it's because our focus has actually become presence.
Yeah.
And through our focus being presence, our building problem was solved.
Right.
And it cost us really not much at all.
Yeah. And that's another example of, like, because that was definitely like on our radar when we planted. It was like, we need a building. We need a building.
We got to get this done fast. We've got a
committee. And then you're right. All of a sudden we just started to, I guess, you know, move the value for just sitting at the feet of Jesus up.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and as we gained a greater value for that, we started just sitting with him. And you're right. All of a sudden it's like, we didn't even really think about a building too much.
Nope.
And then it was like, hey, here's a building.
Yeah, people stop talking about it. Now our name's going to, you know, mean be yeah. on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, we're still in a situation of sharing it, but that is because that's been divinely decided.
Yeah.
That's been what you always had for us. And I'm not upset about it.
No.
You know, and it's figured itself out as we become, because the reality is, I think the more you dive in to the kingdom, you realize there's no dual aiming.
Yeah.
It's just the unfortunate. You actually can't be dual aimed.
Yeah.
You can't be aimed at presence and having a successful business.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be aimed at being, in a weird way, you can't be dually aimed at being a good father and being in the presence.
Yeah.
Being in the presence does all those things.
Yeah.
But it's my heart and mind, soul desire to be in proximity to him, because he speaks over me, the design for me
right.
in that thing.
Yeah.
So why discover it when he'll tell you?
Right. And that's... It's so funny when you talk about like the epigenetics thing that, and I love to, and of course this is how it is because he made everything, but I love when like science is like, actually, like,
yeah, yeah. Those corny terms the church have been using, like what you behold, you become. There's some real science behind that.
It turns out
yeah.
that's happening.
That's like, real.
But you know, but that's the thing is like, the more you sit with the Father and you're just with him and you look at him and you discover who he is and you let him tell you who you are, of course you're going to become a more loving person. You're going to become a better servant. You're going to become, yeah. you know, because yeah. if you're becoming like him, that is who he is and that's what he does.
Yeah, it's the natural state of him.
And he loves and he honors and he yeah. creates and, you know.
You do all those things out of your relationship, out yeah. of your proximity to him because it's the natural state of who he is.
Right.
And it's who you were naturally designed to be.
Yeah.
Like proximity doesn't make you more of something you're not. It actually makes you more of who he knit together in your mother's womb when yeah. he made you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's your natural state of being to be just like Jesus.
Yeah.
And it's only being singly aimed at presence. You know, it's like what scripture says. He says, you know, the eye that's single focused is full of light.
Yeah.
And that's such a statement of being so single good. Aimed at presence and letting everything else kind of fall behind that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so good. You know? And that's, I think probably one of the foundational elements coming back to like the idea of culture and who we are and how we do what we do. And, you yeah. know, is that we are a presence driven culture.
Yeah. Presence driven people.
I think,
man.
You know, at the bottom line, that's just what we want.
Yep. We're wind people, you know, and we're, yeah. you know, we talked about this, I think, a little bit on the last one, but the lean into spontaneity of that.
Yeah.
That presence takes, you know, priority.
Yep.
And that can look interesting.
Yeah.
And that can challenge your fear of man.
Sure.
That can challenge even your state of excellence.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When someone's doing something that you did not plan.
Yeah.
And there's a piece of you that wants to go, hey, sit down. Quit right. singing so loud.
Yeah.
Quit flying a flag like that, you know?
Yeah.
Or whatever it may be. And you have yeah. to lean in and see, okay, Abba, is this you? And when Abba says it is, you just got to,
yeah,
you know, lean back and accept that. And that looks so, it's so different than how we've, because we've unfortunately, I think, even perverted the term excellence.
Sure.
Excellence more now means planned.
Yeah.
Excellence is now, well, you know, the term plan or the word planned for us
mm-hmm.
to be an excellence means that it goes off at exactly this time. Worship yeah. goes exactly this long. The message is exactly yeah. this long.
All the lights worked and
all the lights work. All yeah. the things are planned out. You yeah. know, kids have to sit exactly still in their seat.
Yeah.
You know, this has to be like that.
Right.
You know, and excellence is actually doing exactly what Abba wants you to do.
Right.
You know, yeah. excellence, obedience and rest are actually all the same thing. It's doing exactly what Yahweh wants you to do, nothing less, nothing more. They're actually all three the same.
Wow. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it that way.
Yeah, they're all the same. Rest, excellence, yeah. and obedience. They carry the exact same marks of each other. They all live in the same thing. It's doing exactly what Abba wants you to do, nothing less, nothing more, just yeah. that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I think I'm going to be thinking about that for a minute.
Folks, we'll be right back. Here's a word from our sponsors. yeah. Well, it's hard because that's not what the church has taught us.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. like obedience is not sinning.
Right.
Rest is not a thing. You need to get to work.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And yeah. excellence is planning out every minute detail.
Sure.
Like, I can't, like, you know, yeah. I never walk into a service and know every song Braden's singing because that's Braden's job.
Right.
I don't care.
Yeah.
If right. you always told him to, you know, sing no songs, great. Yeah. You do what you're, I'm not going to sit there and be involved in every minute detail yeah. of everything because that's not what we're called to do, man.
Right. Yeah.
And that's not what good leadership is either. Good leadership is placing people, Abba's placed in their position to do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah. A good leader empowers other leaders.
Yeah. 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 And it's, and you know what I mean? It's, and that's, and you see the beauty of that where I get to even walk into this room and just start talking to you.
Yeah.
I didn't have to go, hey, is this set up? What's going on? How are we doing this? Mm-hmm. You just walk in and you start doing it. And you know what I mean? It's because people are placed right. And that's what excellence is just placing people and letting Abba do what he needs to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and I think that has been a hard shift for us to make. One of those part of the like our exodus and part yeah. of discovering who we're not, because we used to be, you know, you had the 5 minute countdown. Mm-hmm. You started exactly, and if you don't start at exactly the time you said yeah, you
three,
would,
two, one,
hey, welcome. You
yeah.
know,
yeah.
yeah,
yeah.
But now it's like, you know, our service, we say our service time is 4, but sometimes 4:05, 4:10.
We'll start whenever we start.
Yeah.
And, you know, and sometimes, and that often has not come out of rebellion. That's come out of watching people loving on people.
Yeah. Because we have that kingdom family.
I'm not clicking off a service at 4 o'clock while people are hugging everyone.
Right.
And shaking hands and saying hi. Like,
Well,
and because we have no end either.
Right.
I don't have to start at 4.
Yeah.
Because our service can go as long as we want.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, don't, and there's a piece of the kingdom where you lose that fear of man in that.
Sure.
Where you go, look, we're here to love on each other and love on the Lord.
Yeah.
That's what being love is.
Yeah.
It's in the name.
It's in the name. Right there.
So, yeah. You know what I mean? You get out of all that because excellence is doing exactly what Abba's told us to do.
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
We're gathering around presence, around the kingdom. To look in his eyes, you know what I mean? To gaze his face.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah.
We've got a little bit of time left. Let's talk a bit about what we call communities.
Mm.
Because you perked right up.
Great segue. Speaking of communities, here we are. How weird.
But I think this is, you know, in our pursuit of becoming what the church was always meant to be. Yeah. You know, we look at the Acts church and you mentioned earlier, like they met every day, you know, they met
in temple and each other's homes.
Yeah.
It says they would go to temple in the afternoon and then at supper time they were in each other's homes.
Yeah.
This is an all day affair.
And so, and I think this has become a really great expression of our desire to be like the Acts church, just to implement what we call communities.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a bit about that?
Sure.
It's, conception and sort of, I guess really just answering the question, like what is communities and why do we do it the way we do
it? I mean, initially the concept was there's a balance as a leader and, there's a balance as a leader of not doing forced things, but creating gateways for people to do kingdom things.
Sure.
Not forcing a curriculum or a standard on someone,
but
also creating avenues for people to do kingdom stuff, which does come with standards.
Sure.
And so out of that, we begin to think about the concept of like just community, the word in general.
Yeah.
You know, and what does that look like? Because the Acts church, they met daily.
Yeah.
And I actually think, you know, as much as people probably don't want to hear this, I actually think the formula is in that. I think actually daily is where the formula is found.
Sure.
And we're not there yet, and that's okay. You know, it's Christ-like to acquiesce, and so we go as we go. But so it started with this idea of, okay, I think the Western concept of community was small groups, you know, which isn't a terrible thing. It's not really the right thing.
Yeah.
But it's not a terrible thing. And I believe small groups are man's effort in kingdom ways.
Sure.
You know, and they're not bad.
Yeah.
They're just not
his
way per se.
Yeah.
And we're trying to get as close as we can to that. And so, it comes out of that scripture in Acts 2. And our concept was create an avenue for people at Beloved to gather together around the two most holy things that I see in scripture, food and presence.
Yeah.
You know, Jesus's life was built on two things, eating and presence. Yeah. You know, if Jesus wasn't speaking, they were eating. And if he wasn't eating, they were, you know, speaking or performing miracles or something in the presence.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so we wanted to do that. The other big thing was we found with small groups or any of those types of things and is the amount of change that takes place within them. You meet for 12 weeks, you meet for 8 weeks, you do this, and then you're separated again.
Yeah.
So any trust or continuity you've built with someone is gone.
Yeah, and I think the inevitability of that is that like relationships can only go so deep.
So far.
Everything stays pretty shallow if everything is built on like a short-term basis.
And the reality is like nobody wants 20 friends. Unless you're just that person.
Maybe a few people are built like that.
Yeah, but the rest of us aren't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't need 20 guys in my life. I need like 3.
Yeah.
I need 4. You know what I mean? And I saw a stat that said the average American has 12 friends, and I thought, that feels like way too many. 12
friends?
Well,
especially like, because you and Bailey are about to have a kid, and you're about to find out like...
Yeah.
Like, there are going to be even a lot of people that you'd like to spend more time with that you,
that
just,
you can't.
You just can't you really, can't. You know?
And really, a lot of my best friends are actually people that I can talk to once a week, once every 3 weeks, and there's no like strain that it hasn't been every day.
Sure.
You know what I mean? That there's no, you know, one of my best friends in the world, you know, he lives in I think it's Cookeville now, Tennessee, but we can talk for a week, not talk for 2 months, and the next time we talk, it's like we've right talked up. Every week. It's great. And so, but we wanted to create an avenue for people to have community, but the same community, to grow with a group of people.
Yeah.
You know, and the eventual hope, I believe, for us is to see that organically. But for right now,
right.
the blueprint is we have created these groups where people gather. It's 4 to 5 couples.
Yeah.
They gather for 2 hours. The first hour is, you know, around a meal. The second hour is around presence, around these conversations now.
Yeah.
And really with no major format. Mm-hmm. Listen to the podcast, and dive into it as the Spirit leads you to dive into it.
Sure.
You know, and now we have, I think, we have about 98% of our people in a community.
Yeah, which is like
wild. If you include kids, man, it's like 120, 130 people.
Yeah,
which is wild that we have 130 people, you know, doing community every week in a home, sharing a meal.
Yeah.
Gathering around the presence, being together. And a lot of them are growing deeper than that, you know?
Yeah.
Like they're hanging out, they're having special events now.
Yeah.
You know, they text, we have big text chains like ours, text each other all week, different things, you know, sharing fun things or spiritual things, whatever it may be. And so, you know, we developed it this way as kind of this connect with a group of people. You don't have to connect with, even in a church of ours, you know, a small church of ours right now, 100, 150 people maybe.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to connect with 150 people.
No.
And I don't want you to. That feels like a ton of work.
No, you're not really meant to.
No, you're not meant to do that. But if you can find a group of people, because people are searching for community that and they don't have it.
Yeah.
You know, it is a little different, I think, you know, us being in the South, because you got meemaws and pawpaws and every aunt and uncle and cousin that live next door to you around here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But like, even for my family coming from a different country, it was just the four of us. And so you walk into a church and there's, you know, you want to find people that you can connect with, do life with, learn with, share with.
Yeah.
And so it was built out of that and built out of this, you know, doing for our region what looks like the kingdom.
Yeah.
You know, and it looks different for different places.
Yeah.
A lot, you know, there's a lot of families in our river that don't do communities like this at all.
Sure.
But this is what, you know, we felt led to do for our family in our region, our area.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there's something about building those rhythms and routines into your life. And I find that's really helpful for me. I agree that, like, I think one day you hope not to have like a program or something in place that happens organically.
Yeah, you don't have to sign up.
But at the same time, I know for me personally, it really helps to have something like this that I am committed to build that routine and that rhythm.
Because
it can be really easy to isolate yourself and pull back.
It is. Yeah.
And so I think it's really helpful.
Especially
to have
in the world we're in now.
Yeah.
Your job's at home. Your TV's at home. You can get your food delivered at home. You can get your groceries delivered at home.
Yeah.
You don't ever have to see a soul again for the rest of your life if you choose not to.
Yeah.
You know, and it creates some like, you know, intention.
Yeah.
You know, and because there's weeks I don't want to go.
Sure.
There's Thursdays I'm exhausted. I don't want to go hang out with people.
Yeah.
But as soon as I get in there, there's a life in me that's found.
Yeah.
There's something in me that comes alive once again where I go, right.
Yeah.
This is kingdom, man.
Yep.
You know, this is how you do life with people, you know? And, you know, and honestly, too, another big thing is this has even been built out of a life we have modeled before communities were a thing.
Yeah.
You know, like communities even came out of our personal lives, you know, where like, especially when I was single, you know, I would come to your house, I mean, 5 nights a week.
4 or 5 nights a week, probably.
Yeah, and starting at like 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock, and we would hang out till 1 or 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
Every night we'd eat dinner, you know, us and a couple other people would get together. We'd eat dinner. We'd watch movies. We'd talk.
Yeah.
We'd play, you know, card games, you know, play some video games, whatever it was. We were together all the time. And for me, that was a season where I came more alive than ever.
Yep.
You know what I mean? It was a real season that brought pieces of me back to life that had been dead for quite some time.
Yeah.
So even communities was even built out of our personal, you know, that culture was actually built out of a personal culture that we still carry.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's not a day most weeks that we don't see each other. You know, it's just the nature of it.
Yeah.
Our families, you know, we don't have, you know, like our son's not born yet, but when our, you know, when my son's born, our kids will be together probably a couple times a week. Our wives talk every day. We talk every day. Our families see each other 3-4 times a week.
Yeah.
You know, whatever it is. And there's a couple people in our lives that we do the same thing with.
Yeah.
And that's just a natural state.
Yeah.
So
I think we're about out of time, but I think, you know, one last thing I love about the idea of community is that, like, should the church grow and get bigger? Not that that's really our goal.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
But I think as people find, you know, that we're teaching and offering beloved identity and offering kingdom family.
Hungry people will find food.
I think that's a really attractive thing to people.
Yeah, the real gospel is attractive.
And what I love is, is that should the church get really big, I think you can keep a small church feel.
Always.
Because that's honestly one of my favorite things about our church is that we walk in and we actually feel like a big family.
Yeah.
And that's like when people come and visit, that's the thing that we get time and time again. They say over and over and over again, people come to visit and they say, we can't believe how welcoming and kind and friendly and what a family feel you guys have.
Yeah. It's real. You know, it's real there's no number you can get to where you don't also can feel like family.
Yeah.
There just isn't.
Yeah.
It's just an intentional thing to be there.
Yeah.
You know, I think family becomes natural when you all have the same desire, which is presence, which isn't the desire of oftentimes everyone in a church.
Yeah.
It's just the reality. Sometimes it's a checklist. Sometimes it's, you know, just because you want to feel good about yourself or something your family's done forever.
Yeah.
But really, to be here, you have to desire presence.
Yeah.
If not, you're not going to like it.
Yeah.
It's just the nature
If you don't like long services, you don't like, you know, long worship.
Yeah. If you don't like, you know, the Spirit moving, how He's going to move, it's not for you. But when it is, you naturally come into the fold.
Yeah.
And because we all share the same hunger.
Yeah.
We get the same, you know, same passions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's all the time we have for today.
Awesome.
Once again, thanks for being here.
Anytime, man. I'll fly in from my house 10 minutes from here anytime.
Cool. All right. Well, that's all we've got for this week. We love y'all. Have a good week. We'll see you next week.